Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Victoria Herman, who is the Managing Director of the Arctic Institute, a Gates Scholar at Cambridge University, and a National Geographic Explorer. Her research focuses on human development, climate change, and adaptation in the Arctic. And she has an article at The Guardian, "I am an Arctic researcher. Donald Trump is deleting my citations." Welcome to Background Briefing, Victoria Herman.
Thanks for having me.
And today, Donald Trump, flanked by a group of coal miners, announced that his energy revolution that would put coal miners back to work. And he also, of course, in doing so, is reversing and killing President Obama's Clean Power Plan. But let's start with how it's affecting you. It's one thing to roll back efforts to deal with climate change and global warming, which in itself is a pretty extraordinary thing. But it's another thing to attack not just the science, but the information itself. Isn't that sort of Orwellian?
It is a bit Orwellian, and it gets at our ability to both inform the public about how the environment is changing around them and to prepare them for the consequences of climate change that we can no longer avoid. And it also hinders researchers from nonprofits like myself, from think tanks, from research institutions at universities that use that federal data as baseline information for creating additional studies on greenhouse gas emissions, on renewable energy deployment, on how adaptation is best fitted for remote communities in the Arctic.
But in attacking the science of global warming, is there any evidence anywhere with either the Trump administration, with Scott Pruitt, with the president himself, and the people that back climate denial, have they ever made any kind of effort to justify what they're doing? Is there any basis apart from the financial clout of the fossil fuel industry?
To my knowledge, there has not been an acknowledgement from anyone in the Trump administration or the current heads of the EPA, the Energy Department, or any other federal administration to acknowledge a reason for why deleting data for making it more difficult for the public and for scientists to get a hold of these studies, beyond what you said, kind of the finances behind the fossil fuel industry. I think that it really gets back to a more ideological view of science and what science research means in the United States today in the political arena, that it is not based on science-based reasoning, but rather what the perception is of base voters' opinions about science, about how science can inform policy and the importance of the work that researchers do.
Could it also be quite simply that Donald Trump made these ridiculous promises on the stump, like building a wall and a whole bunch of stuff that he said, obviously to get votes, that he's not the first politician to make exaggerated claims, to put it politely, on the stump, but they normally back away from them. I'm floundering here, Victoria Herman, because I'm trying to find a reasoning for example, promising these coal miners, as the president did today in the Oval Office, in signing this rollback of the Clean Power Plan, to, you know, bring back jobs. Well, reality is taking the jobs away. The fact that natural gas from fracking, et cetera, has proven to be much cheaper and cleaner. I mean, the outside world is Wall Street, is whatever. I'd list a whole bunch of reasons why it's happening, but it's nothing to do with, I mean, it is something to do with the Clean Power Plan, obviously, but the reality is, from what I'm understanding, that it's the marketplace that's killing coal, not Obama.
Yes, that's correct. It is the market of coal. It's the availability of cheaper fossil fuel resources like natural gas, but also increasingly less expensive renewable energy for off-grid and more rural communities that would benefit from coal. I think you really got to the core of this when you said that it was, you know, making stump promises that could not be kept, and really was reaching out to Americans that are in reality hurting economically. But it is not because of climate change regulation. It is not because of energy regulation or the promise through the Paris Agreement or through the clean energy, the clean power plan to ensure that we're reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and that we're supporting a green, prosperous economy for the future. It is just the market of fossil fuels currently, particularly coal, but also petroleum jobs. We've seen that in the majority of states in the union that renewable energy and green jobs have now outpaced the fossil fuel industry. So it's, you know, reality catching up to the Trump administration. And I think that the voters and individuals that believed President Trump during the campaign that he would be able to bring back those coal jobs will be in for a sore awakening in the years to come when the reality is that the world economy is moving forward in a green way and the United States is being left behind.
And again, I'm speaking with Victoria Herman, who is the Managing Director of the Arctic Institute, a Gates Scholar at Cambridge University, and a National Geographic Explorer. Her research focuses on human development, climate change, and adaptation in the Arctic, and she has an article at The Guardian, "I'm an Arctic Researcher, Donald Trump is deleting my citations." Now, the president's daughter, Ivanka Trump, and her husband, who's a White House advisor who seems to be in charge of just about every portfolio imaginable now in the White House, Jared Kushner, apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, they've convinced Donald Trump to remove language critical of the Paris Accord. But my understanding is that when you get rid of the Clean Power Plan, you're basically putting the Paris Accords in jeopardy. What's your understanding of that?
That would be the correct read of this. The Paris Agreement is based on national contributions to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It sets the world on a path to reducing global warming to below 2 degrees Celsius and hopefully to below 1.5 degrees Celsius, but that relies on national contributions to that reduction that are set by federal governments across the world. So the United States contribution to the Paris Agreement is based on our national policies for how we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. So that is entirely up to the federal government and not anything that was dictated in an international treaty or an international process. So when you kill the Clean Power Plan and you start to roll back these Obama administration climate change programs, then you are essentially reducing the United States' national contribution to reducing global greenhouse gas emissions.
So what's your understanding then of the Supreme Court case, that the Massachusetts versus the EPA? In other words, are there impediments to this sort of sweeping signing today by Donald Trump? In other words, is there any way that it can be slowed or blocked? Because clearly, this is a move in the wrong direction, to put it mildly. Because my understanding about global warming and how the climate is changing as a result of global warming is that we are rapidly reaching a point of no return, and that it's not as if we should be taking radical action now. We should have taken radical action years ago. And the idea that we're rolling back is, to my mind, is actually criminal. But that may be too opinionated for our for being fair and balanced, etc. But nevertheless, is there an impediment there? Are the courts going to stop it? Is this a done deal?
I think there will be a good deal of legal battles in the years to come that will be long and will be on multiple levels in the United States against different aspects of what Trump is doing, not just with the Clean Power Plan, but across climate change and environmental regulations that he's rolling back. What I think that people will have to look out for is local champions, states and cities that will take up the cause of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and investing in adaptation and resilience at the local level when the federal government is doing very little to protect American citizens and to grow a green economy. So I think that those two things, that local action and that the courts will hopefully be able to stem what the Trump administration is trying to do in the next 4 or 8 years.
So from your perspective as an Arctic researcher, and as you pointed out both in your article in The Guardian and a few minutes ago in our conversation, that the work that you do is essentially being censored. It's being taken off government websites. And so the data, the science itself is under attack, not to mention the planet itself from global warming. My understanding, when I a minute ago mentioned that this is clearly completely the wrong direction, how much does the work that you do support this idea that we are rapidly reaching a threshold, a point of no return? Because my understanding is, and we've seen it very clearly from satellite imagery, how the polar ice caps have reduced enormously, and this year more than ever. And it's pretty logical to me, if you put, for example, if you put an ice cube in a glass of water, the level of the water rises. So isn't that, first of all, happening? If all that ice starts to melt, or at least a lot of it, and pieces as big as many countries are dropping into the Antarctic and the Arctic as we speak. So is that, first of all, happening?
Yes, that is happening. And talking about a point of no return, or, you know, passing a threshold, for the communities that I work with, both at the Arctic Institute, but also as a National Geographic Explorer, that threshold has already been passed. Throughout the last year and a half, I've been going across the United States to interview hundreds of people who have either considered or have already decided to relocate their communities away from the coastlines because of increased storm surges, because of erosion that's exacerbated by sea level rise. So I have seen in Shishmaref, Alaska, in Île-de-Jean-Charles, in Louisiana, the price we have to pay for not acting on climate change that communities are already dealing with today. And those are just a handful of communities. But by the end of this century, over 400 towns and cities in the United States will be partially underwater, no matter how much we decrease our carbon emissions today. So that doesn't just affect remote communities in Alaska or communities in the bayou. It affects your neighbors. It affects your family. And that's something that people have to consider as they're looking at what the Trump administration is doing to climate change mitigation and adaptation policy.
Now, among those 400 communities that you just mentioned, would Mar-a-Lago, his estate down in Florida, be one of those?
It would be, and Florida is one of the most at-risk geographies in the country to climate change. We see both West Palm Beach, but also Miami as a huge population center, being at risk to extreme inundation and sea level rise coming up from their porous foundation. And I was down in Florida earlier this year to talk to city officials in Miami and in Miami Beach and Miami-Dade County about what they're doing for climate change, both mitigation and adaptation. For them, it's a reality. And despite them being in a state that does not allow them to speak openly about climate change, and in a country that is now actively regressing policies on climate mitigation and adaptation, again, those local champions are the ones that are pushing cities and states forward to ensure that those citizens next to Mar-a-Lago are as protected as they can be as sea levels rise.
So will Trump live to see water lapping on the doorstep of his estate?
I think that Trump will likely live to see a storm surge from more extreme weather that happens because of climate change come up on Mar-a-Lago. And importantly, I think his son, his youngest son, his daughters, his other sons, his grandchildren, all of them will be intimately affected by a changing climate. And I think that's really what's missing in this conversation, and everything that the Trump administration has said about climate change. It is all about the current economy. It is all about the current United States. But there are the younger generation today and the next generation that are completely cut out of the conversation, but will see the worst effects of what he's doing to policy now.
And in terms of the self-reinforcing nature of climate change and the results of global warming from climate change, I mentioned the melting of the ice caps, but that in itself, not just the logic of the water melting and then adding to the sea level, that's logical in terms of the example of putting an ice cube in a glass of water. But also, isn't also what happens is that the white surfaces of the Arctic reflect all that light back into outer space. And as that amount of whiteness is reduced and replaced by the dark ocean, which doesn't reflect light, that reinforces the cycle, does it not?
That's exactly right. So there's a feedback loop. When you lose white ice and white snow, that you're losing the ability of those surfaces to reflect that heat. So instead, it gets absorbed, making sea temperatures higher, and in turn, making air temperatures higher, which not only melt more sea ice and more snow, but they also cause more extreme weather events. So you get extreme hurricanes in the continental United States. A saying that we like to use in the Arctic community is that what happens in the north doesn't stay in the north. So the sea ice that you see receding there doesn't just affect communities in Alaska. It affects Los Angeles. It affects New York City. It affects Miami.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Victoria, then one of the things that Trump's already done is remove the requirement that fracking companies, oil and gas companies, have to mitigate the release of methane from drilling and fracking for natural gas. And we mentioned how natural gas is becoming cheaper because it's more plentiful, and that's the real reason why coal is going out of business. So that's already been done. And we know that methane is, I think, about almost 100 times worse than CO2. That's in itself is, to my mind, criminal that he's already done that, because we don't know what the inventory of how much methane is leaking from fracking and from the infrastructure, the natural gas infrastructure, which goes all the way to the home. Every time you smell of gas in your home, that's methane. That's adding to the problem. But isn't there also something in terms of the Arctic that's happening, that if you reach a certain level, again, we're talking about thresholds, that if the permafrost melts at a certain level, then massive amounts of methane also get released on top of the fact that the frackers have been given a free hand to leak methane into the atmosphere?
Yeah, so that's, again, right. You see that methane that's trapped in the organic material of permafrost, once it thaws, that methane is released into the atmosphere, which, again, increases your greenhouse gas effect, warms air and water temperatures, which then translates to more permafrost being thawed. And that cycle just keeps feeding back into itself until you kind of reach that threshold where enough permafrost is melted, is thawed, that you can't stop that cycle anymore. It's kind of a trigger event for additional permafrost thaw, sea ice extent. And like you said, methane is, I think, about 84 times more potent than carbon dioxide in its first 20 years and 25 more in a 100-year period, which is an incredible climate forcer and something that we can effectively regulate in natural gas and fossil fuel extraction. We can't regulate it in permafrost thaw. And the places that we do have the power to mitigate that emission, President Trump is now foregoing that. So we're not only going to inevitably see increases in methane release from permafrost, but now we have to worry about additional methane leaks from natural gas sources that we thought were being regulated by the federal government, which is aim is to protect its citizens.
And just a month ago, the EPA, or very recently, the EPA threw out that rule that protected citizens from this methane lease from natural gas and fracking and the infrastructure. So it's already happened. Victoria Herman, I thank you very much for joining us. I know it's bad news, but it ought to shake people up sufficiently to do something about it. And just in the last minute, what can they do?
I think that people can be engaged at the local level. It's important to reach out to your national representatives to tell them how important it is for them to act on climate change. But equally important, reach out to your local mayor, reach out to your local city or town council, and see what you can do to get involved in supporting renewable energy in your community, making sure you have an adaptation plan for those storm surges if you're on the coast, or drought if you're further inland. But just be politically engaged at all levels. That's the most important thing you can do right now.
Well, Victoria Herman, I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Victoria Herman, who's the Managing Director of the Arctic Institute, a Gates Scholar at Cambridge University and a National Geographic Explorer. Her research focuses on human development, climate change and adaptation in the Arctic. And she has an article at The Guardian, "I am an Arctic researcher. Donald Trump is deleting my citations." We're going to take a brief station break and be back examining further the Trump administration's attack on the centerpiece of Obama's environmental legacy.